KALW.
Growing up, my father taught me a lot of things. If you talk to him about it, he'll tell you a funny, well, a story that he thinks is funny, where he used to take me to rob houses with him when I was a baby.
Today, the lessons we learn from our family, good and bad.
I was fearful about changing my life because I was worried about how my father would judge me.
And the things we choose to bring with us from our past.
It's a blessing to have kids, and it's also a challenge to try to raise your kids by being incarcerated. And I'm just grateful that my kids are who they are today. They didn't follow in my footsteps.
It's a new story from the third season of Uncuffed. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Before we get to today's show, we have a special note from one of the advisors of Uncuffed.
Women in prison are always overlooked, and we need to change that. We're mothers, sisters, wives, and friends, and our stories need to be told. I'm Ms. Betty McKay, pronouns she, her, queen. I spent 27 years in CIW, the California Institution for Women. Now, I'm on the advisory board of For Uncuffed. I need your help. Bringing this program to women and non-binary folks at CIW for the first time. We are raising $50,000 to bring Uncuffed to incarcerated women. And we need your help. Go to weareuncuffed.org and click donate. Thank you.
Thanks, Betty. Today, for Giving Tuesday, we have a $50,000 match from some generous supporters. So help Uncuffed go to a women's prison by donating today. And now, on to today's episode of Uncuffed. Here's producer Brian Acey.
Welcome to Uncuffed. This is Brian Acey from San Quentin. I'm here with two distinguished gentlemen. Can you guys introduce yourself?
I'm Timothy Hicks.
And I'm Greg Eskridge. But before we go any further, Brian Acey, I can't let this go without you letting everybody know that this is your first time actually hosting.
This is my first
episode.
Time. Yeah. I feel excited. I never thought I'd be doing something like this. A little nervous in the same thing, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, you look nervous too.
We're here for you though, man. We got you back, man. This is a piece of cake, man. We're doing is just having a conversation.
All right.
And so speaking of conversation, Brian, what's going on today? Well, you got some questions for us?
Yeah, I have a few questions. So my first question is, what is something that a parent or a loved one taught you that you still use today? You want to kick it off, Greg?
Yeah. Man, you know, I do have some memories like that, but the one thing that sticks out for me is one thing that my mother, that I got from my mother was cleaning up.
Okay.
And to this day, so first of all, let me just say, I hated cleaning up back when I was young, right? Like my mother, she would come in there every Saturday. We had to clean the house up and do all this stuff, man. And she wouldn't let us go out, let me go outside until I cleaned up the house. And so until I came to prison, I really started to value, you know, the fact that my mother was a clean person. And because It rubbed off on me, and I became a clean person. I actually became a clean freak.
That's
like, I'm like OCD, like clean.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't let no dishes pile up, no clothing pile up, none of that. I don't like smells, odors. I love the smell of bleach. I love the smell of soap. And I got that from my mother, man.
I think for me, it was my uncle. He taught me how to play football. Right. Mm-hmm. And how do I translate that into today? Mm-hmm. I think it's about paying attention. He taught me how to be present and pay attention. So what about you, Tim?
So unlike you guys, you know, you was taught football by your uncle and you was taught how to clean, you know, from your moms, you know, and one thing that I could think of that lasted, that had a lasting impression on me was how my father, he taught me how to sell drugs. So, you know, I didn't get those upbringings like you guys had, you know. Mm. You know, he tried his best, you know, growing up, you know, with him and my moms, you know, but you know, at those times in life, you know, everybody was struggling in the ghetto. It was something that led to me committing crime and, you know, and coming to prison. So, you know, I look back at that as a bad lesson. You know, I looked at that as something that maybe I shouldn't have picked up on it. You know, maybe I shouldn't have been so curious. But at the same time, I you know, I take it for what it is.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of ironic how some of the things that we pick up from our families, they that's just what they know. And some things might not be good, but that's just what's passed down to us.
Yeah, I agree with you, man, because that definitely was passed down to me, man. And I was selling drugs ever since I was 12 years old. And I just remember growing up selling drugs and I didn't know nothing else. Like, thinking about what you just said, though, when I'm thinking about my pops, he didn't know no better. You know, didn't know no better. He wasn't taught, you know, how to really provide for his family the right way, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, it's what he learned, too, growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're about to hear a story you just did about somebody talking about their dad. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. When I met Jesse Milo, you know, he described like his relationship with his dad and how it came about and took some turns and now where he's at right now. And I felt like we were had some relatable situations.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided to bring him on down, get an interview. And that's what prompted this story that I'm about to share with you guys right now. You know, so I hope everybody enjoy it.
All right. Let's take a listen. Well, growing up, my father taught me a lot of things. If you talk to him about it, he'll tell you a funny, well, a story that he thinks is funny, where he used to take me to rob houses with him when I was a baby. And he'd be like, oh, you were such a good baby. And you were quiet when I was robbing houses. Then I remember when I was about 5, the police kicked in our door and took him to prison. And that was the first time I was really without my dad. And when he was in prison, he would make me things and he would send me art. Art has always been a part of my life, probably in an unconventional way. It was also with my mom. I used to ride with her to the methadone clinic when I was young. She used to get high on heroin and she used to doodle these flowers from the magazine. And I used to always see that and I kind of liked it and I started doing it too. And then with my father, I really didn't see him doing art before he went to prison, but when he was in prison, I remember getting things from him. And one of the things that I loved the most was, I was about in like first grade, and he sent me this wooden box for my school supplies. And it had Garfield on the front, on the top of the box, and he was sitting on a pile of money like he was a bank robber. And I know that looking back, that's pretty inappropriate for a kid, but I really loved that box. So when my dad got out of prison, I think I was about 11, my big cousin Anthony, he got me collecting comic books and he was murdered when I was a teenager. And Wolverine was like my favorite character. And I asked my dad if he could show me how to draw it. And that was when he taught me how to trace Wolverine for the first time. That got me trying to trace everything. So I would find all the lowrider art magazines or anything I could find really and just trace whatever I could. And then it would be some time before I actually learned how to shade things in. And so, but for me at 11, I thought it was pretty cool just to trace something. One memory stands out really prominent in my mind when I was in juvenile hall. I remember there was a counselor and he was yelling at me. And I was sitting on the floor because when you got in trouble in juvenile hall, they made you sit on the floor, face a wall somewhere. And he told me, he said, you'll never cut it. You can't cut it in prison. And I remember thinking, I'm my father's son and my father grew up in prison. Like, who are you to tell me I can't cut it in prison? It was like he told me that I wasn't enough. It just kind of set prison up as a challenge for me, as something that, like, to be accomplished. And so I didn't have that in the front of my mind, but that was always there in the back of my mind. And I know that because when I got to prison, I remember thinking, like, man, this ain't shit. Like, anybody can do this. Anybody can do time, but it's a waste of your life.
it's a waste of your light and your spirit. And I look back on that moment and I wish that that counselor in juvenile hall would have dared me to college and would have said, like, you can't cut it in college. Because then maybe in my young mind, I would have flipped it and dared myself to college. Like, I wish he would have dared me to the better side of me, to the greatness that I had in me, instead of to the worst place in society. And when I got there, there was a lot of lockdown. There was a lot of riots going on. And we weren't allowed to participate in mental health due to prison politics. You get attacked if you participate in mental health. And so, but one thing I could do in my prison cell was draw. And my cell used to draw at the time too. And so anything I needed, I could get from him. And so that was one thing I did have access to. And so I started drawing on handkerchiefs. And that really helped me cope with my incarceration until I was able to get into mental health treatment about 15 years later. But then art continued to help me with my incarceration, but also my growth. Because when I used to go to self-help groups, later I would work on my art. And that provided me that quiet space to look within myself and kind of go over the things I learned in group. And so art was kind of like that meditative space for me, where it gave me room to continue to grow. So the comic art for me started in a kind of weird way. It was in the beginning of the pandemic. A lot of us didn't know who would live or die. I remember my parents got sick early on, and it was pretty scary. I was going through depression, and I didn't know if I would lose any of my family to COVID. But when I was worried about COVID, my uncle was murdered by my nephew. And a week before that, my little cousin had took his own life. And then my grandma died the very next day after my uncle was murdered. While in my prison cell, trying to cope with just life, I started making these comics, just pointing out the ironies about prison life. And one of the ones that was, one of the first published ones was where it's a little guy and he's looking in what's a prison metal toilet. And he's saying, it looks the same on my tray at chow. And so it was very simple, but I showed it to my neighbors on the tier in Corcoran and they loved it. And then everyone loved it. It's people here in San Quentin, they tell me about it. They're like, man, I love that one. I have it on my wall. So getting published has been kind of a new experience for me. People see me and know that I'm alive, like it does something for me. Because when I was sent to die here, my name wasn't even in the newspaper. And so to have the world like know that I exist is just pretty cool for me. When I was 22, when I was sent to die in prison, and my sentence always told me that I had no value, that I had nothing good left to offer the world, and I had no chance for release in this life. And so I really had to look within myself and ask, was that true? And so for many years, I carried that shame and that guilt, like that I had no good in me. And with art, I realized that that's not really true, because I can make things for people and make them smile. And I do have good to offer. I was fearful about changing my life because I was worried about how my father would judge me. And I was like, man, like, would he even talk to me? And so the cool thing was, when I did change my life, I got to see my father, and like, he didn't even trip. He was just like, you know, are you okay in here? You know, since I've been incarcerated, my father's been there. He's been my support. He's been there to visit me. And this whole time, in the last 20 years, 21 years, he hasn't been back to jail as a prisoner. And he's been successful. He's been out there working. And so it's pretty cool to see that transformation in my father, and then I could share my change with him. A year and a half ago, my little brother was arrested for murder in Los Angeles. And the way his case kind of happened was similar to mine. And he just had a little son, baby Noah. And he is now in the county jail drawing and sending things to his kid. And he asked me for drawings and different things. And so it's sad because here I am 20 years into my incarceration. and I hope to be out someday. And I hope my little brother goes free as well. I just hope that we're not trading places like me and my dad traded places.
Yeah, that was deep. Just heard from Jesse Milo. Tim, that was your story.
Yeah, man, that was real heavy, man. You know, dude got a lot of stuff that he went through, you know, and it was real, real heartbreaking, man, to hear it, man. You know, my pops, he ain't never been to prison, though. Like, and me and my pops ain't trade places like he and his, but my pops is doing well, too. So that's what actually connected me to his story.
It really just reminds you that as we walk around these prison yards, you never really truly know what a person has been through until you sit down with them and they tell their story. This was trauma. Like, this was a sad life that this young dude had to live. And, you know, we talked about passing down that trauma from generation to generation. It's truly sad.
Yeah. Yeah, as a father myself, you know, and then thinking about how my father was growing up teaching me, I'm thinking of his father, you know, like his dad, he didn't know no better. At least he passed down something memorable to his son. They can share, you know, in conversation or however, you know, they connect today. And that was art, you know,
art.
So it was something that helped him escape mental things he was going through inside prison. You know, at least he had something that his dad taught him that can help him escape this misery of prison that folks go through.
I'm glad that he still has something to hold on to, something beautiful to hold on to, which is his art.
So I got a question for you. So is there anything that you would want to pass on to your kids?
I passed on something to my sons kind of similar to that, because my sons used to see me selling dope. They used to see me coming in the house with money, jewelry, all them cars. But in their lives, I was a connected dad. Mm-hmm. You know, I was one of them dads who was really in my children's life. But when I came to prison, my sons, they was like 12, 13 years old. I got disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think coming to prison, like I did, it done something to my sons because they started getting in trouble, you know, and a couple of them even came to prison. So, yeah, that story really, really hit me. You know, that's why I was glad I got him, man, you know, because I think that story needed to be told.
Yeah, Tim, I hear you on that, bro. I definitely know it has to be a challenge, you know, inside of being inside of a prison, you know, and then having children out there. But definitely, you know, you were doing the best with what you had at the time, with your thought process, your belief systems that were passed on to you. And so I know your walk now, and I know you definitely trying to instill something positive in there to basically change that narrative and try to disrupt that generational trauma. Fortunately, I don't have kids. I see a lot of people, a lot of gentlemen in prison who have children, and I see how difficult it is for them to try to parent while inside of prison. Love them, but never had any. But I do have a little sister. I definitely just would love to pass on to her just to be a good person, continue to try to persevere through life. Cause that was my biggest thing, persevering, going through struggles. And I just want to pass on that resiliency. I think my 30 years of incarceration is an example of somebody that been through a bad situation, but is not being defined by that bad situation, and that's really finding some purpose and some meaning in my life. Even though I'm incarcerated, but I still wake up with a smile every single day. I'm still consistent in that.
Greg, you hit on something. Like, my walk now, since I've been incarcerated these 17 years, my sons have transformed their lives out there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, they are, all of them working, you know, got good jobs. And really, they got kids of their own now. Yeah. You know, so I got grandkids out there.
Grandpa.
Yeah.
Grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, man.
A wonderful feeling.
Yeah, my son's doing good. I'm really proud of him right now.
Absolutely. But, you know, even that just goes to show that how you've changed. You know, you've changed. Your kids have changed. And I'm quite sure that, you know, they were modeling what they seen from you. Just like Jesse's father turned his whole life around and been coming to see him for the last 20 plus years he's been incarcerated.
Yeah.
And his father's change has helped Jesse change. It's interesting how his early caretaker, his father, showed him a lot of negative character traits and he gravitated and adopted those traits, right? And end up committing a crime and becoming incarcerated. But now his father's turned a whole new leaf. And now Jesse's been inspired by his father. And actually, they're inspiring each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's full circle. That's full circle.
You got kids, Brian?
Yeah, I have kids, man. But it's a blessing to have kids. And it's also a challenge to try to raise your kids by being incarcerated. And I'm just grateful that my kids are who they are today. They didn't follow in my footsteps. I'm extremely proud of my kids. Does that have anything to do with me not being there?
That's a good point.
Right? To show them some of these bad traits that I had at the time? That's like the question I'd asked earlier. What would be something that you want to pass down to your kids? And I think for me, what I would want to pass down to my kids is what my mother passed down to me is being a caring person, because she would bring people into our house. We didn't have nothing. I always wonder, why did she do that? Then I find myself doing things that I wonder, why am I doing that? But that's just something that was passed down to me.
You know, he said something else in one of his pieces about how the counselor dude dared him. You know, he kind of like said, you wouldn't make it in prison.
Like a challenge to him.
You know, he like challenged him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what you think about that?
I think that's like reverse psychology. Mm-hmm. Telling a person they can't do something and they just do it to show you that they can do it. That was a negative for him. Mm. He took it as a challenge.
What about you, Greg?
So, yeah, I remember growing up, and when I was young, my sister's father basically told me that I was going to either end up dead or I was going to end up in jail, you know, and that's crazy to say to a child, you know, instead of trying to get me off this path and show me something better. Like, you've just told me that I got these two options, which are both terrible.
Yeah.
Well, death is going to come one day soon. But jail?
I really can relate to that in that piece when he said that about the counselor, and then he daring himself to do something, then he does something, and then he comes to jail. And that's why you're right, Greg, though, when you say we got to be careful about the stuff we tell these kids and the stuff that we put out, you know, like how we do now in the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, how we publish our stuff now. You know, even the piece when he said up in there with how he published his first piece of art, you know, and how that made him feel.
Yeah.
You know, he putting another message out there now, you know, the same stuff that we do right now.
A positive message.
Yeah,
too.
Positive message. Yeah. You know, so that really mean, it meant something to me when I got my first piece published in the San Quentin News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I seen my name, you know, as the byline, you know, like, man, that's Timothy Hicks right there, man. How did that
make you feel?
Well, I felt like, I was on top of the world, boy. You know what I'm saying? We all do Pete Greg, award-winning podcaster, whatever, purpose media, the mogul type, you know, what are the titles you got out there, G?
Yeah, so Greg, how did that make you feel when you got your first award?
Man, just like Jesse said in his piece, he felt visible. Felt like somebody was finally seeing him. That's what I felt like.
Yeah.
Somebody was finally seeing me. Somebody was finally hearing me. And seeing me and hearing me for doing something productive and something positive as opposed to getting that negative recognition. Because for too long in my life, I sought out that negative recognition. And now, everything I try to do is positive. Every voice I try to put on the microphone, I'm trying to lift up everybody's voice because I want everybody that's incarcerated to be able to feel the same feeling I felt when somebody said, Here's a Radio Story by Greg Eskridge.
Yeah. For me, it was the TEDx event.
TEDx?
Yeah, TEDx event. We did a TEDx event here in 2016.
In prison?
In prison, yeah. And I think that was one of the biggest accomplishments that I ever done. You know, after doing that, I felt like I was seen.
I think what we're doing right now is great, being able to come down here to this media center, man, and be creative right now in this space right here now, uncuffed. We're leaving a legacy for somebody else, G.
Absolutely. Definitely leaving a legacy. Just like the fathers were leaving legacy of negativity, now everyone is creating positive legacies, and the same thing we're doing right now. Now is we're going to pass uncuffed on to the next group of people coming in, and it's going to just keep telling the stories of incarcerated people, continuing to amplify our voices in a positive way.
That excerpt from the Uncuffed podcast was made by the crew at San Quentin State Prison, Greg Eskridge, Timothy Hicks, Brian Acey, Juan Haynes, Ryan Pagan, and Anthony Carvalho. Find links to Jesse Milo's artwork and poetry at our website, klw.org/crosscurrents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, James Rollins, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shudeen Adil, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.